All right. Well, here we are with our third of these little drosh segments where we just talk about things that relate to our faith and generally back to the Bible in some way.
And agriculture.
And agriculture, right. Tying the two together. And today it's a very hard and clear tie, I think. Well, somewhat.
Yeah. So there's a festival in the Bible coming up called Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And before Passover, there's four Shabbats. There's a lot of Shabbats before Passover, but there's four Sabbaths that come up before that have special names for them. And it's in some ways, I think, in an effort to get yourself ready for Passover. So the first one is Shabbat Zakor, which means, and this is the one that is right before Purim. And that one literally means the Shabbat of remembrance. Then you have Shabbat Parah, which is the Sabbath of the heifer, which is where we are at now. And then we have Shabbat HaKodesh, which is the Shabbat of the new moon. And then we have Shabbat HaGadol, which is the big or great, Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes right before Passover. So Passover always comes on the Hebrew month, Nisan, on the 14th day of the month.
Which is the new moon. So if you start a month according to the moon at the new moon. I'm sorry, it's not the new moon, it's a full moon. So if you started at the new moon and then 2 weeks later, so there's a couple of holidays that fall on the full moon, and Passover is one of them.
So
I think Sukkot is the other.
Sukkot definitely seems like it's always on
the full moon. And I do think there are a lot of parallels between those two holidays, actually. So not that I'm an expert, but I've heard that said, and I think it's interesting. Both of them are really about prepping and being ready to dwell with the Creator, I think. It's like making a decision to move in with Him and then actually doing it. I don't know.
Well, one of the first places after the Israelites crossed the Red Sea, the first place they dwell is, Sukkot. The name of it is Sukkoth, which means temporary dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's an interesting parallel. We're going down a rabbit hole I wasn't even expecting.
Whoops.
But obviously, if there's a Shabbat that's called Shabbat Parah, Shabbat of the heifer, I'm all in and talking about cows and Shabbat.
So here's a funny, roundabout story.
Okay.
When I was pregnant with Naomi, I don't know if Drew remembers this or not, but when I was pregnant,
I do remember when you were pregnant with Naomi.
It was a long time ago, and we both had jobs. JOBs in retail, and I think we were both really eager to get out of those jobs, and we were trying to come up with something that we could do. We both came out of art school. We both wanted to kind of work with our hands, and so for a minute we decided we were going to make paper for a living. And we really didn't make it very far. We bought the equipment to make paper.
Did we?
Well, we bought a press, and we were going to make it make paper, but we never actually did. We probably still have the press. We should make paper now. But anyway, I bring that up to say that we were going to name it Parah Paper. And I don't even remember exactly why.
We're going to make it cow paper?
Yeah.
Man.
There was something to do with, I think there was an element of knowing I wanted cows eventually.
Well, I remember I got you that Hebrew necklace that said the letter.
Oh,
the word chai.
Chai, yeah.
And you thought it was a cow.
It looks like a cow. Yeah, there were, I don't know what all the reasons were, but but anyway, I just think that every time I hear the word Parah, I just think, oh my goodness, that's so funny.
That's so funny. I do not remember that name. But, okay, so the Parah, I don't know, what does it make you think of? So I think we should elaborate what the red heifer is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a very interesting thing in and of itself.
What's a heifer?
A heifer is a cow that has not had a baby.
A cow is a female cow.
Yeah. So a female
bovine
cattle. I don't know what you say if you don't say cow.
I know.
But that has not had a baby. There's more specific, in the Torah, the Old Testament, there's more specific words of it like has not had a yoke. The rabbis go on to say, like, this red heifer that the Torah is talking about actually, like, has every hair on its body is red. Its eyelashes, everything. There can't be any kind of impurity on this animal at all. Interestingly enough, one of the other versions I was reading, the commentary said that red was incorrectly translated, that it was actually brown, which is hilarious to me. But I think the point of it is that it is a very rare animal to find, is what my thought is on the Torah. What the Torah is trying to make us do is pause and look for something. And so this red heifer.
Well, and isn't it interesting? I mean, in all truth, if the Creator wanted us to find one, He would make it exist.
Sure.
So it's like, yeah, there's this hunt, like it's of our own effort, but it's not really that. I mean, if the Lord wants us to create this anointing water, this cleansing water, He'll make that.
Well, we didn't get to that part, so okay. I'm glad you brought that up. So talk about what the red heifer does.
Well, so it's really the first step in prepping for opening the doors to the gates of the tabernacle at that time, because it was a tool designed to cleanse and wash away uncleanliness from anyone that approaches. So it was very specific. You burn this heifer, all of its parts and pieces, its dung even, and then the ashes are gathered.
With a few herbs, like I know.
Oh yeah, cedar wood and hyssop. Yeah.
Was it myrrh? Yeah, there's a few herbs that are also in there.
See if you can find that. Anyways, and they burn all of that. And there's this process of one person does this, and then they're unclean, and then they have to wash, and then they have to, and then they're clean again at the end of the day. So, like, it's an interesting process. And I think one of the things that I had to untrain myself from thinking about the unclean thing, unclean does not mean unvalued or bad or unholy. Sinful. It just means wash yourself, right? Like when my kid comes in at the end of the day dirty, I feel like that was a good day, right? And then they take a bath and then they get in their bed sometimes. Anyway, but the point being, like, I don't want them to not get their hands dirty. I want them to get their hands dirty and then to understand the difference between having dirty hands and having clean hands and all the responsibilities that you take on by getting your hands dirty in participating in this or any activity that requires your hands to get dirty. Anyway, that's a whole separate subject, really. But there are several people involved and several steps involved in, you know, finding the red heifer and then also, you know, burning or slaughtering, burning, collecting the ashes. And there's like steps in between.
It feels like, so you collect the ashes with it says hyssop, cedar wood, crimson material, throw them into the fire, and then you take out these ashes, mix it with water. It feels like you're making a biodynamic preparation.
It sure does.
And you put that essentially in a spray bottle. You can
spray bottle.
It doesn't say spray bottle. It says you can sprinkle it on people. Uh-huh. And it cleanses anything that it touches. The next part goes on to then say that somebody needs to clean this up afterwards. And the rest of the ashes and that whole process. And the person that touches that is then unclean until the next day, which is very, like, kind of like you were saying, but it like, fascinates me that this very thing that is, like, the key step to purifying the temple, purifying the garments that the high priest wears, all of that also is making someone unclean.
Right. So it's not holy until it's holy, I guess.
Right. And it makes me think that the point of it is not the actual materials, but the ritual. And that's had me like thinking.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think that the ritual is important, but I think that what I see in this is that there is this, what feels like you've burned something to the point where there's no value in it anymore. And then it becomes the most important element that makes everything else possible. And what that means to me is that we may think that something is meaningless or pointless, but there's an energy to it that we can't potentially fathom or understand, nor do we need to. We just need to follow the steps, right? And the steps are not hard steps. They're just I don't know what the word is, like you one after the other after the other. It's not like it's so complicated. I mean, if we could find a red heifer even here, we could potentially do all of these
things. We do have a red heifer on our farm.
Well, I mean, a pure white hairless red heifer. Actually, no, she's bred, so she's not a heifer.
Right. Any day she will not be a heifer.
Any day she'll not be a heifer. Anyway, so yeah, and this is something I will say, I mean, an interesting place to kind of keep your eyes on. And I really don't know their affiliations at all. So no judgments, you know, like I think it's neat what they're doing and like to watch. It's called the Temple Institute, and you can go, you can even visit them when you're in Israel and see all of the parts and pieces that they've gathered and built that they're ready to sort of bring the temple back to reality.
Right.
And they do currently, I think, or at least they did last I saw, have a red heifer that's being scrutinized by the powers that be.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, over the years, I mean, since like middle school, my family's been following them, and I feel like maybe they've had 10 candidates for red heifer.
This isn't the first.
It's definitely not the first.
Interesting.
I don't know what happens.
But I do think it's a sign of the Messianic era, right? Like to think of the temple being restored. And so anyway, it's something to keep your eye on, I think, just in general. I mean, I think, first of all, the idea that these people were looking for something so specific, what are we looking for that's so specific in our lives? And I think, you know, it doesn't have to be a red heifer, but what could it be? What are we required to look for and seek with such acute awareness and conviction? I don't know. It just is like, it's an interesting idea in a lot of ways. And how do we apply that to our lives? Because I do think that, you know, all of this, the goal for me in really deeply evaluating any of it is, okay, but what do I do with that?
I agree. And like, and then the other part is like also, out of four Shabbats before Passover, why is this one of them?
Should we be doing this kind of seeking right now, like specifically at this time of year?
Yeah, and like, okay, so let's say like, you know, reality is we're probably not going to actually physically find a red heifer, but like, what does that symbolize in the preparation for Passover?
Well, we are prepping, you know, this is the time of year where we start thinking about what do we have in our cabinets that we need to clean out, because we will get rid of as much of the chametz, if not all of it. We always manage to miss some.
And chametz is what?
Chametz is the leavened bread. So anything that is grains or, you know, for us, we really focus on the breads and the things that have yeast and baking soda, things that rise when you cook them or that rise before you cook them. Those are the things we look to get out as a part of the commandment of keeping Passover.
Symbolizes the feast of unleavened bread. Sin in some ways, or
well, maybe it's partly this to symbolize this process of searching,
right?
Like turning every stone to find this thing. I don't know. It's like this thoroughness that I don't think that I certainly don't apply to my daily life as much as I should.
Right. I mean, I know like even today I told Abraham, like, pull out the trash cans and clean out underneath them because we're getting ready for Passover, you know, like
crunch time.
Yeah. It's starting to be like there's no way to like really get every last bit of yeast out of the house. But like the goal is to like really start thinking about it. And if the Shabbat before was Shabbat of remembrance, and now we remembered, essentially in some ways it's like, oh yeah, Passover's coming up.
Right.
You know, but the overall part of Passover is to tell the story to our children. That's what it says, is like, when your children ask, why do we do this thing? And why is this what we do every year? You'll say to them, because the Lord with a mighty hand brought us out of the land of Egypt. And we were slaves and we are no longer. And that that purification to get to the point where we can participate in Passover is an interesting concept that I think brings a holiness to Passover that I haven't really considered before. Like, I think of it as an important festival, but I've always thought of like the fall holidays, like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, as the really important ones in but I think the creating of Israel and as a nation, as God's people, really comes from Passover. So, you know, it's interesting.
Well, I think like we just, you know, a couple of drashas ago, we talked about the red heifer or the golden calf. And I mean, I never really pieced this together, but wouldn't the red heifer be this like specific answer to that? Well, and I mean, they even had to grind up that golden calf and drink it, right? Right.
That's what I was
saying. Yeah. I mean, the whole process of no. You don't make the things that are perfect and beautiful. I make them. You find them. You honor them. You cherish them. You do what I say to do with them. It's like this delineation of like power and what a like interesting concept to when you come and you are purified. You do this holy thing that is specifically not what our human nature would have come up with, you know?
Yeah, you don't make like an idol. You like take something and grind it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, was this something that they did every year? Or like, was it like a one-time thing?
I think it was one time.
You could like keep it in a bottle and as long as you had
some. Wasn't it kept in the ark or am I making that up? It was kept with the holy... I don't know. I mean, could you just keep adding more of the ashes to the water or did they just have a never ending?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let us know if you know.
But I mean, the truth is like when you think about purifying water, coal is often used. Charcoal is often used for a myriad of different things to cleanse. And so, I mean, yeah, it does have a cleansing power potency.
Also, biodynamics, it really feels like you're, accessing the vibration.
Yes.
You know, it's not, what do you call that when it's, really diluted?
Homeopathic?
Yeah, homeopathic.
For sure, yeah.
You know, it's past, the ashes aren't really doing that much anymore. You're, absorbing that frequency.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of that I know with especially biodynamic preparations, that's kind of where my mind keeps going is like a lot of it is intention. As you stir or mix that, you know, you're putting that vibration into it. So in the same way, like this being a...
Well, it always makes me wonder too, with the golden calf, it felt like a nice idea, you know, it felt like the intentions were to worship God via... this, but who knows what frequencies that had, what energies that had that we can't measure. And God was like, not only do I not want you to do that, and maybe I don't want you to do that just specifically because it's not good for you. You know, how many things do we have in our lives that we enjoy but aren't good for us?
Right.
And sure, there's not a rule specifically about each and every one. I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of an example of you make a choice to eat a bag of Doritos and you're like, this isn't going to kill me. Well, no, it's not. But on regular, it's not going to have a positive impact on your health. Right. So what are the things that seem like they're harmless or not necessarily a big deal, but they are in some way affecting us. And in ways, Doritos is obvious how it affects us. And who knows, obviously EMFs come to mind or right. 5G or all the things that we can't see or that we're using as a tool. And it seems like, oh yeah, but it's helping. It's beneficial. It's good for us. And it really may not be, but you know, maybe that was the effect of the golden calf in a way that we didn't really understand. Anyway, it's a way to think about it. Who knows?
Yeah. 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 I feel like it's kind of like another commentary I read just said essentially this is one of those, the red heifer is another one of those that nobody knows the answer to.
Nobody knows the answer.
So it's kind of.
I feel like we just answered. Problem solved.
I mean, it's kind of like a do it because God said to. And
yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, you'll figure it out or find the meaning in it for yourself.
Yeah. Maybe you don't need to. Maybe the meaning is doing something without having complete control over the reason or the outcome or understanding of all of that. So, yeah. Well, I didn't think we'd have this much to talk about.
So let us know what you think about the red heifer. Do you have a red heifer on your farm? Or what is a red heifer that you're using to prepare yourself for the Passover from the
upcoming holidays
for you being able to leave slavery, celebrating you leaving slavery. All right. Thanks for listening.